listening to Viral Podcasting, the place to go to learn how to generate a six-figure income or more from your podcast. To get the latest tips and information, go to viralpodcasting.com.
Welcome. You are listening to Viral Podcasting. I'm Kerry Lutz, and this is show number 23. Well, we talk about podcasting. What makes a great podcaster? What is a podcaster? Is it a state of mind? Is it a skill set? Is it a passion? Is it a hobby? Well, it's probably all these things and a lot more. You might not be aware of it, but there's actually a movie out about podcasting, and we're going to get the person who was the driving force behind it. I guess, Chris, you were the producer, the director, the executive producer, the fundraiser in chief, talking about Chris Kremitzos. And I met you, Chris, at your Tampa Podcasters Meetup, by far one of the best meetup and podcasting groups that I've ever been to, if not the best. So welcome to Viral Podcasting.
Oh, Kerry, thanks for having me on.
Hey, so you get this idea for the movie, to make a movie about podcasters called The Messengers. Where did the idea come from? Did it just pop into your head one day, or did you have some inspiration? How did it happen?
Well, so we have a local meetup group called the Florida Podcast Association, and we're putting on our yearly conference called PodFest. And before that conference, I looked at the guest list, and we had Glenn the Geek Hebert, who does the Horse Radio Network. So I started looking at all the different podcasters we had, and we had all these really unique topics and people that were doing podcasts. So I asked a friend of mine who does video, I said, do you think this could be a movie? And I said to him, please don't answer lightly, because if we have to make a movie, you know, and I know it'll take a year of our life to do it. And he said, no, I think we have something that's visually demonstrable. And that was Neil Gilarte. He has All Things Post, a podcast for editors. And we, 6 days out before the conference, we got a crew to start filming interviews. And that's kind of the idea, was like, hey, how do we promote through a video? What is podcasting? Because most people just don't get it. They'll tell you, I don't see what you're doing. And literally what they're telling you is visually, they don't see what you're doing. So we wanted to create a story that kind of shows the impact that podcasters have and why they do what they do. And then that's how the movie The Messengers was born.
Right. And you went to numerous countries. You're in Puerto Rico. You're all over the U.S. How long did it take to do this?
It took us about a year. Just like we said, we went to Guatemala. Then we went to the territory of Puerto Rico and traveled all across the U.S. We didn't have a working title when we first started the project. It was just called like the podcast movie. And we did a focus group with a consultant friend of mine and a couple friends. And they all said we should call it a podcast documentary, which really wasn't inspiring, to be honest with you. And Neil, who he and I directed the movie together, said, hey, why don't we just do some interviews and the name will find us. And what happened was, we were interviewing Lee Silverstein of the Colon Cancer Podcast. And I asked Lee, is a stage 4 survivor, and he inspires other people through his podcast. I said, Lee, what, you know, you don't look like a typical podcaster, even though I don't know what that looks like. What would you consider yourself? And he looked me dead set in the eyes and he said, I'm a messenger. Because when I was diagnosed with cancer, I wish someone had this message for me. And we realized that all podcasters at their core are messengers. So that's how we came up with the name The Messengers, a podcast documentary. So everybody got to, you know, win. You know, we still have a podcast documentary as a tagline, and it works.
Well, you know, you make a great point there. I view myself as a messenger, a conduit, bringing, you know, I'm doing a financial podcast, alternative finance, what's really happening with the economy. And I've been doing it, this is the seventh year, over 5,000 episodes. And people say, well, you know, what are you doing exactly? And I say, yeah, I'm a messenger. I'm bringing you different viewpoints, different divergent viewpoints. They could be diametrically opposed, one right after the other, because I want you to think. I don't want to tell you what to do. I want to help you find it in yourself. You figure out what to do. You don't need me to, you don't need another person in your life telling you what to do. So being a messenger, I think, is so spot on as to what we do. But it's not a messenger that takes a piece of paper, some documents, and goes from one office to the other. It's a messenger that takes an idea from one place and spreads it out all over the place. So it's much more etheric and much more much more profound than just delivering something from point A to point B.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So obviously it costs money to make movies, right? And you, for a large portion of the project, like throughout, you were always kind of running behind. You were kind of behind the eight ball as far as funding goes.
Yeah, we ran out of money pretty quickly. And then we crowdfunded. So we started filming, I think April, June, we started doing like the on-location shoots. Within like 2 weeks, we ran out of money because what people don't understand when you see a movie, the expenses are you have to pay your crew. So if you have a 3-person crew, which is a skeleton crew, or 2-person crew, each person has to get paid a daily rate, and then you got to feed your crew. If you're traveling, you have to pay for travel for the crew, house the crew, feed the crew. But basically what we did is we did a crowdfunding during the summer months. And during that crowdfunding, we were able to raise $21,000. We reached 110% of goal. And that helped us fund about 40% of the movie. And then luckily, you know, I was able to fund the rest. So it just... a movie is a very big undertaking. I would not, if you really want to make a full feature length film, it just, you need to consider making sure your crew gets paid, understanding how much travel is involved, and then you have to pay for the editing, which is the final process, and that's never ending.
Yeah, in the case of the Messengers, so, you had to go to the Messengers, most of them, although you got some at Podfest, but you were really out there going from place to place, getting their stories, and so. I don't remember how many people you actually interviewed during the making of the movie, but did you find a common theme among podcasters?
Yeah, we interviewed about 60 people. We interviewed over 100, I think, but it got condensed to maybe 40-ish people were featured. The common theme is that people found this amazing medium that has listeners waiting to listen to a message, and they want to leave, you know, some people want to entertain, other people want to inform, but at the end of the day, they all want to do the same thing, which is leave someone better off than they started when they were listening to the podcast. So it's a really great community of people trying to make a difference in the world.
And obviously they had varying degrees of financial success, viability, if you will. What the ones who are financially successful, what was the theme running through there?
Yeah, the podcasters that have done really well have done one of two things. Either they got an early start and they were able to build an audience before anyone knew what was going on with podcasting, which was a huge advantage to them because they were able to build up massive numbers. Or you have podcasters in what we call a super niche. And the podcasters are in really small niches that actually own a market share of those ears, are worth quite a bit to advertising or to their consulting, speaking, you know, back end, whatever it is that they've created.
Yeah, so if I could paraphrase you, they had some type of path to monetization, if you will, some type of plan. Either they had a unique advantage being first. You can never overemphasize being first, because if you're first and you're smart, it's really hard for others to catch up to you. But they were adding on to already successful businesses. That's what I've seen in what I do. Or they were really just hit it lucky, some of them, right?
Yeah, the first mover advantage is for podcasting was a huge thing. However, there's a lot of people still claiming really great niches out there that are still, you know, open to be claimed.
Yeah, well, it's really the perfect competitive marketplace, podcasting arena, because you got very easy low cost of entry and very easy exit when it doesn't work. And if one doesn't work, you can go try another and another till hopefully you find something that does.
Yeah, the most successful podcasters that we have in our group started with one podcast, wasn't successful, but pivoted with another one. And usually the second or third one is what really took off.
Right. So it's a learning process. And in terms of technical proficiency, I think the ones that I saw, they were kind of all over the board, weren't they?
Yeah, some people know how to do it. Others, you know, the barrier to entry is very little to none at this point, because you could find editors for very cheap. You know, they're very cost effective. So there's no reason why, you know, someone can't get started with podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in terms of refining your skills, you've done a number of podcasts. How do you turbocharge or supercharge your growth once you start podcasting?
Well, people forget that the number one asset is 90% of the promotions is before you release an episode. So some people start promoting after the episode is released. I would tell people promote the episode before it's released. So 90% of your marketing is before is the anticipation of something. So you just have to be really clever about how to infiltrate your audience, find their ears and them finding you and understanding where to fish. So for me, I'm just very blessed that I've made some really great content, and through word of mouth, depending on the niche, the word spreads. So it's really easy when you have good content and it's tailored to an audience that is niche.
And then your meetup group, if I could just pivot over to that, your meetup group consists of a number of successful podcasters. And were they successful before they came to the meetup, or were they on the cusp of success and they learned something from the meetup group? If you're not familiar with meetup, you just go to meetup.com and put in Tampa podcasters and it'll come right up. But their growth, were they successful before you started the meetup, or did they get successful during the course of the meetup?
Yeah, the majority of them launched because of the meetup and the education that we provide there. And then we have a support system and network. We have service providers at the meetup. So we've created our own ecosystem. And when someone sees one person successful in the same room, it actually snowballs and everybody helps one another. So we've launched at least 100 podcasters out of our meetup, and many of them have monetized in many different ways, and they do extremely well. So what most people don't realize is success when... Let's say you say Richard Branson to someone and you talk about them. Okay, that's great. Richard Branson, many people think is an anomaly, but if I'm in a room and I see someone next to me that's successful in a podcast, it's much more attainable. So because of that, we've been able to really create a successful track record and a culture and community of helping one another succeed. So we've launched quite a few podcasts. Our members have within our group.
Yeah. And when we talk about promoting your podcast, we're using social media, email marketing, we paying for any marketing, or do we just do this organically?
I personally have done organically, but I'm not opposed to using Facebook ads or LinkedIn ads, social media. You definitely want to use all the tools at your disposal. The advice I would give someone starting out is pick one platform that you're familiar with, do it well, and be proficient until you move on to another platform, unless you could pay someone to help you do it.
Hey, so if you were starting out, Chris, you're starting your podcast out today, and knowing all that you know, what is the biggest thing that you would do differently?
I'd make sure to launch my podcast within a niche. I'd make sure to probably advertise and start a Facebook page and a group before I ever launch my podcast with some dollars just to see the traction. And then, you know, between the three platforms, you know, usually you'll see used is either Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But I'd pick one or two of them and own it until I'd expand to the second or third.
Interesting. I totally agree. I'm big on planning it out before you record your first episode. If you're going to treat this seriously and you feel like you're going to be in it for the long term, why not do a business plan? Because, you know, the old saying, if you're not planning to succeed, then you're planning to fail, right?
Yeah. And sometimes, though, what I found, you asked me if I were, you know, that's ideal. Sometimes if your analysis paralysis, you're better off just putting it out there and then doing the rest later as you go along. But, you know, if you could plan and test things, it always helps.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on your background, if you've started businesses before. And hey, a lot of times the beauty of podcasting I found is that you don't have to be super serious about it to start. And then once you actually start doing it, something happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, something magical happens. And you know, sometimes just getting it started. I have friends that have been thinking about doing a podcast that they already have recorded for 4 or 5 months before they ever launch it. That just drives me nuts.
Yeah, well, I was kind of in that camp. And I was like, going to start something called the Daily Biz Coach. And I actually found like 6 or 7 episodes on my computer recently. And I didn't have the right equipment, at least the equipment that I have now, the equipment I'm comfortable with. I had a concept. I did write scripts, but it was really tough sledding. I never released it. But I listened to them and they were like half decent. I was surprised that they were as good as they were. So I... What is something, the number one thing when you listen to a podcast that really is like a pet peeve and you say, why are they doing it this way?
I just hate when people are, this is my opinion, so take it for what it's worth. If I'm listening to specialized information, like I'm trying to get to specialized information, I hate when they do a whole song and dance. You know, if you're not like a professional entertainer and you you don't really know how to entertain an audience, don't try it. You know what I mean? Get into the content. Yeah. At the back end, you want to mention some stuff and that you've earned my right as a listener, I'll get more into your story. So it's just a pet peeve. Like, they mark the content, I start listening and it takes 7 minutes to get into it. That's a waste of time. So I usually, like most people, click off and don't ever listen to the show.
Hey, so true. I think what you point to is a lack of authenticity, a lack of it being real. It's okay if they make some mistakes, stumble on some words, if it's got a little more hiss than maybe your podcast would have were you to produce it. But when it's not real, when they are trying to convey something that just isn't so, I think that's like a major turnoff.
Yeah, I agree. I'll forgive actually audio quality if the content's good, but it's when people are kind of just stroking their ego and just talking about nothing that upsets me. Now, I listen to Joe Rogan. His podcasts are 2 or 3 hours long. But Joe Rogan, even though he's doing small talk, his shows are interesting and his guests are extremely interesting. So, you know, it really depends on the talent you have on the show as well.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. And some guests, hey, you've interviewed people. What's the worst guest you can ever remember having on? You don't have to name them. Just to tell us what it was about.
Well, I do a lot of live events. The worst speaker we ever had was on a cruise, and they started telling everybody how they were a swinger, and they started saying stuff that had nothing to do with the presentation, and I had to like pull the hook on them, but it was still 15 minutes too late. And they wanted to prove a point that we judge people in our minds, so he started saying outrageous things. So to offend people, to show them that we judge. But he missed the point. He was booked to talk about internet marketing, not personal development. So... that was the worst I've ever had. And, you know, I remember once I had a mayor I was interviewing, and I asked him one question, and I didn't have the guts at the time to butt in, and he talked for 30 minutes on one question. So it was kind of like, there was no need for me to be up on stage.
Totally filibustered. So when you look back, and I know you've done hundreds and hundreds of episodes, is there one that stands out in your mind where you said, I was in the zone, I crushed it. I don't know if I could ever do it much better than I just did.
There's quite a few, actually. Most of my, I haven't put up a lot of my stuff. We do everything in front of a live audience and we record them. So I'm going to be repodcasting them because we do them live here in a local community. But I interviewed the founder of Hooters, Ed DeRosti. And that was one of the best interviews I ever did. And then we did a panel of people that were on Shark Tank. That was really well done. There's a couple of times where I hit the ball right out of the park. And you kind of feel it, you know, you're in flow and you create magic. So I'm very fortunate to say that I've had at least maybe 20 or 30 occasions where I hit the ball out of the park on my metric, which is very strict, in front of a live audience. So when you have a live audience, you know immediately if you did well or not.
Oh, that's for sure. And then what about when you felt like you didn't do your best, where you were just like awful?
Yeah, a long time ago when I started in TV, we used to do a TV show. I had I didn't have a guest, so I put one of my crew members on. He had just retired out of the military, and he was so boring and talked for so long. And again, I didn't have the guts to butt in and stop him. It took me a month to get over that show. I was so upset about how awful that show was. Luckily for me, because I don't let go of things, I improved the quality of the show almost immediately. But that was a tough show. I mean, I remember some of my crew members were like, man, they didn't say it, but you could tell that they were like, that was boring. So I still remember that occasion. And I remember how personally I took it.
Yeah. Well, and that helps you grow. You know, you don't learn.
Absolutely.
You don't learn from your successes. You learn from your failures. That's what I always say. And God knows we all have enough of them starting out in podcasting. I always, you know, you asked me what was the most embarrassing moment in my podcasting career. And I said the first 30 episodes, and believe me, I meant it. I was horrible. So, but you grow, if you keep doing it, you really love it. And I think that's another thing that the top podcasters, these guys who are really successful, regardless how you measure success, they really love what they're doing and they've got a passion for it, don't they?
They do. And they care about their audience. And, you know, you've done thousands of episodes. You've built a relationship with your audience that is very tough to replace.
Yeah. It's all about connections, connecting, and your audience comes to trust you. They come to love you. They look forward to you. They get upset when you release an episode 5 minutes later than you should have. I mean, there's a real connection there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So going forward, what is your biggest goal going forward?
Right now I'm in the process. I want to write a book. So I'm looking to hire a journalist to help me with that. And just growing PodFest Multimedia Expo into the largest international conference for podcasters. And then from there, I'm spinning off a conference for YouTubers and streamers. So I'm just building out. I just got into the national international conference side of things, and I'm just enjoying it. So those are kind of my goals in the background there.
Yeah, and if you haven't been to PodFest, I've been to a few other, and I don't want to say competing because I don't really think they compete.
Yeah, we all know each other and help each other out.
But I feel like PodFest, you know, when I went there, and I went for the first time last year, it was a very warm feeling, like everybody was there. It was kind of like some of the other ones started out to be a few years ago, but you've managed to maintain it. You get 1,500, 2,000 people. Are you going to be able to keep that feeling going?
Well, we're on pace to hit about 1,000. Yeah, absolutely. The culture will expand, Kerry, and it'll be carried by you and the other attendees. So we just make sure that people understand the culture and the expectations, and we do that via podcast. We create a podcast along with Dave Jackson about our culture and our community. We make sure that most people listen to it so they know what they're in for, and we spread that message. So it really helps. So I think we're not only going to expand, but we're going to make it even deeper as each year goes by.
And I, like I said, the one that I went to last February was just otherworldly. Really enjoyed it. The people there were great, and you know, everybody was learning from everybody, and the whole format of what you did with a lot of the events was really just very powerful and very, very productive.
Well, we're looking to kick it up a notch this year. And if anyone wants to attend, you know, podfest.us is our website, and we're just getting everything up and running. And we're just excited about, you know, the opportunity that the community has bestowed on us to help beginners, help veterans, and connect the two.
Yeah, that's great. So podfest.us. Any other sites we should look for your work, Chris?
For the documentary, if you go to the Messengers doc, that's doc.com, you could take a view. The Messengers has 50 reviews on iTunes. I believe it's 4 or 5 stars, whatever the highest is. If you'd like to watch that work, you could buy it or rent it. And then you could also find it on Amazon, The Messengers, a podcast documentary.
All right. Hey, Chris, really appreciate your coming on the show. Been a pleasure. Best of luck on your book. And hey, go out and watch The Messengers. Go buy it on iTunes. It's really worth it.
Thanks, Gary. We'll see you at PodFest.
This has been another episode of Viral Podcasting. Be sure to visit us at viralpodcasting.com.